Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly opportunity to be talking technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. It's good to have your company. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk. We are always keen to hear what technology you are playing with, what's working, what's not working, and all of that. TechTalk at rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's TechTalk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K, at rnib.org.uk. And we look forward to hearing from you. Oh, and you can send a voice note in there as well if you like. So it would be good to hear your actual voice as well as your words. Now, coming up this time on Tech Talk, we'll be hearing about how AI is making Android more accessible. And that's with Steve Nutt from Computer Room Services. Plus, we'll be taking a little bit of a trip down memory lane with RNIB Connect Radio's very own Ken Reed. That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. We've no Callum this week, but we are joined by Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovich. Great to have you both with us, folks. Let's find out what's on your tech table this time. Jackie Brown.
I have my hands full with the soon-to-be-launched edition of Braille on Display 2024. So that is being launched pretty soon by the Braillists, and anybody will be able to get a free copy of the book. It's been updated. There's lots of new stuff in it, lots of old or legacy devices in it as well that I've kept in, but hopefully it's a very useful compendium, and that's what I've been working on.
This is a buyer's guide for anybody interested in acquiring a Braille display, where you list the features and dimensions and capabilities of a wide range of Braille products. This is the second edition of the book, Jackie.
Third.
As much change since the third?
Yes.
Oh, well, there you are. Happily to be corrected on that. So as much change since the first and the second edition?
I think it has, in a way, because there are certainly more devices out there. Every time I seem to finish a chapter on one device, then another one popped up and I thought, oh no, I'm never going to get this finished. But yeah, I mean, there is a lot in this. Especially a new section I've introduced about multi-line readers. So the last version did touch on the Canute 360, but now that's been extended to the Canute 360 console, and there's the Monarch, and there are the Orbit slates. So there is a lot going on with multi-line Braille as well, which is a new section. And of course, there are some new Braille displays out there as well, which weren't in the last edition. So there is a lot in the book. It's much longer. And we do have some Braille input only devices in the book as well, like the Orbit Writer, the Hable 1, and of course, Braille screen input for Android and iOS, and the BT Speak and the Orbit Speak. So there's a lot going on.
There we are. Braille on Display, a compendium of Braille reading and writing devices, digital devices. I guess you've got to draw a line somewhere, Jackie.
Yeah, absolutely. They're all digital devices. And the book is going to be available to anybody who wants a copy.
That'll be via the Braillists Foundation. Well, thank you very much. Hubert Pavalkovich, what's new with you?
Being someone that's rediscovered Braille tech over the last year, I'm definitely looking forward to getting hold of a copy to learn more about and see your comparisons. For me, I've been playing around with a beta version of the Envision Assistant, and I'm not going to say too much about it, apart from I quite like that the difference with kind of AI assistants, you know, where you take a picture of something and it will tell you what's on it, or if you take a picture of a letter and it'll read it to you. The difference is this assistant, you can actually design the personality you want from it, which I find quite unique. So I've designed my assistants to be a bit more kind of sarcastic personality with a dark sense of humor, and I found it really interesting reading my post with that. And it's a unique commentary on my various correspondence.
You love all that, don't you? I mean, I find I get a little bit irritated when the tech starts to try and, you know, be a bit sassy or whatever, but you really enjoy that.
I like this to have a personality. I don't mind the robotic stuff, and we've all started with very robotic sounding voices and technologies, but I don't know. I like a bit of personality. If I have to use it on a very regular basis, I'd like it to have a bit of personality. I think that's my personal preference, but I think it all depends as to kind of who kind of prefers what from their assistant. But yeah, I found that fascinating when I saw previews of it. I thought this will be interesting and it'd be different.
How about you, Jackie?
I like a bit of both. I like to get the job done that I need them to do. So, in that sense, I don't sort of want too much personality. But at the same time, in a way, I think all things, well, I've noticed over the years anyway, all devices have a kind of personality in their own way. Well, they do for me anyway, regardless. I don't mean to give them personalities, but they sometimes they do end up with them. So, a bit of both for me, but as long as it's productive, that's the main thing.
Our Amazon Echo device just sort of randomly one day said, "I am here, you know." I don't know if she thought I was talking about her.
Wow, never had
A
this
little
one
bit
before.
insecure. All right, well, there we are. Is your tech insecure? Let us know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. All right, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Time now on Tech Talk to go for a little bit of a nostalgia feeling as we discuss assistive technology and do a bit of reminiscing. And joining me to do exactly that is the host of one of our brand new shows on Connect Radio. From the mixtape, it's our very own Ken Reed. Ken, thank you for joining us.
Hello, and glad to be with you. Just a bit trepidated that when I thought I qualify for nostalgia. But there we go.
Well, I love a bit. To be honest, we could all reminisce about the piece of assistive technology that we all had as our first, really, of any age, I think. So let's find out, what was the first piece of assistive technology that you owned?
It is really hard to think back to that. In a way, I think the first way technology assisted me was a very early version of Windows PCs. This is somewhere in the mid 1980s. And you could go into the settings on a Windows PC and change all the colors. And as I know, retinitis pigmentosa, I found the color schemes that were the default colors, mostly dark clustering out of a fairly light background, wasn't terribly helpful for me. So I changed it all to light lettering out of a dark background. I had huge fun. I spent ages dabbling with the palette. There was always 32 colors to choose from. It shouldn't have taken that long. But it was interesting to do and got everything different. Absolutely no idea you could do that with modern Windows. I've moved on so far from that kind of assistive technology. So that was where it started for me, trying to adapt technology, use the technology to assist me to some better.
Years ago, when I still had usable vision and I needed to help myself to see the screen better, and my favorite thing was be able to invert colors, which I've only discovered by accident, but then I found that it actually really does help me read text and use the computer without straining my eyes so much, looking at bright colours.
Absolutely. So I did use inversion as well. That actually leads very nicely to I think it was the very first piece of specialist assisted tech that I had. It was all for work. The work I was doing at the time was mostly desk-based, talking about reading and such like. And yet it was an inverter. That was its main role. I didn't need magnification, but I did need everything to be inverted. And whilst Windows would invert some things, you still find once you put into the various locations, they weren't inverted. So I got a product that was called Vista, which is quite interesting because Windows came out with a version of Windows called Vista at some stage further along the line. So my Vista must have long since disappeared. And it had a three button mouse. So I had to remove the traditional mouse and put this three button mouse in. And that gave me the opportunity to do different things, including invert the color on the screen. I could sort of do a drag, a zoom in, a zoom out type of function on it as well. All sorts of quite clever things. So it was good. And I also had a closed circuit TV, which I used in inverted mode to allow me to papers that still some people still insist on sending in papers, and I could read them on my CCTV with the colours inverted. Great until you got to some colour photographs, but that was really quite strange. The things that it did to certain people's faces and other such things when you change the cameras around. We sometimes complain about things like JAWS and how it works, but you know, I had to get a special graphics card installed into my PC. I had to get this special 3-button mouse. I had the CCTV device sitting to the side of my PC. I also had a 34-inch monitor to be able sitting just in front of my face. And I got a phone call from my colleague who was sitting at the far end of the table. Lol, and said, you've spelled that word wrong. I said, he's looking over my shoulder from the far end of the office because I've got this, you know, this huge, great big monitor sitting on my desk. And but it was great. It meant I could carry on working. And so this is meant to be 18-6. I first got my technology.
This question I'll ask you, I find it quite tricky to answer, but I'd be curious to see what your answer would be. If you would have to pick your favourite piece of assistive technology that you have used, what would it be?
Probably the most useful piece of assistive technology that I have had over those years, or you know, what we're looking at 30 odd years now, is JAWS. And having JAWS available on my computer progressively, I first started using JAWS when my site deteriorated. I couldn't use that kind of magnification inversion and all the rest of it. It wasn't doing it for me anymore. And I changed my job and I got JAWS. And at first I thought, oh, this is all. How am I going to cope with this? And the whole idea of speech output, synthetic speech, it wasn't just synthetic, it was pathetic as well. It was the quality was pretty poor, but it worked. It did the job and it enabled me to kind of working. So JAWS is definitely, and I still use JAWS now. I'm using JAWS as we speak here to run my laptop. So I've traveled with JAWS a long way. So that's kind of the specialist piece. But the most, outside of that, the most useful thing I would say is actually a Bluetooth keyboard for my phone. I use an iPhone, and so I cross platform here, and Windows on my laptop and Apple on my phone, no bother with that. And I learned to touch type almost as soon as I knew I was going to go blind, and it's been an incredibly valuable skill to have. And so having a Bluetooth keyboard to interact with my phone rather than having to do on-screen typing, which I can do, and largely I think I can do it because I'm a touch typist, so I can instinctively know the layout of a QWERTY keyboard. That's okay as long as it's short messages. But anything longer than having the Bluetooth keyboard to be able to just type freely into emails, SIs, I use it a lot for social media stuff and all that sort of thing. That's not specialist, that's mainstream technology, but it's been such an assistant.
What piece of assistive technology is currently making your life easier?
Rolling into the whole aspect of having JAWS on my laptop, the fact that my phone speaks to me out the box. And you don't have to pay for anything extra. You buy an iPhone. And I think my other phones are available, and I believe Android does the same nowadays. You can just switch on VoiceOver, and it works, and that's there. And I guess probably my favorite modern piece of technology, recent technology, I've been using this for quite a long time, is my Apple Watch. First thing in the morning, it goes on my wrist until it doesn't come off until last thing at night, so I charge up. With smartphones, I had a light bulb moment at some point along the way when I realized they're called smart because they're not phones. The last thing most people do with their smartphone is make a call. You do all sorts of other things on smartphones, and smartwatches are the same. They do so many things apart from tell the time. You can tell the time on it if that's important to you. It's a fitness tracker, and I appreciate that side of it. It's a payment device, and I find that hugely valuable. I use that as my primary way of paying for things, is just to flash my watch. And when I first started doing this 5 years ago, I guess it probably was, folks, you're paying on your watch? How does that work? But now nobody's bats an eyelid. It's just normal. It's just what people do. And I'm not the only one in my community that does it. I was actually a bit of a trendsetter.
Yeah.
I don't normally think of myself like that. I think I'm more of a follower, an early adopter, but not a top reader would be where I'd probably stick myself. But I was quite early in with the Apple Watch and using it for all manner of different things. And as I say, I'm into my sport, my fitness side. I use an app called Strava as well. Anybody who does sport will know it tracks it. It tells you how long you've been going for, where you've been, how many kilometers, how many meters of ascent, all sorts of good stuff. It's great.
One final question. If you would like to see one piece of assistive technology revived, what would it be?
That kind of dedicated book player is probably obsolete now because it's all a new CC reader app of my phone to read, my RNIB talking books. And so I don't need that anymore for most purposes. But it had some great things in it. The speeding up, which is available in AC Reader, was really important. I find thinking back that the sort of skip back and skip forward functions in the Daisy Player were better than the old AC Reader. So yeah, I'd like to transport some of the functions, but probably not the whole device.
Fantastic. Well, there we go. That's a bit of a nostalgia technology chat there for you here on Tech Talk. Thank you very much, Ken Reed, for joining us. Before I let you go, though, why don't you tell us all about your brand new show on Connect Radio?
It's a music show. It goes out at 8 p.m. on a Monday night, and it's repeated at 1 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. And, of course, you can listen to it in between those times by going to the RIB Connect Radio website. The mixtape is, well, that's nostalgia as well. It's taking people my era mostly back to a time where we used to sit in front of our rather squeaky transistor radio with our even squeakier cassette recorder and record our favorite tracks as they come up. So what I'm doing is compiling a mixtape on a theme each week. I'll pick some songs that fit the theme, and then we'll play through them. But I won't tell you what the theme is until we've listened to the first four tracks. And there's an opportunity for you to listen in, hear the tracks, have a thought about what you think it might be that we're going to be hearing more of. Later in the show, there'll be what I call a left fielder, which is something that fits the theme, but might not have been there front of mind at the first moment. And then there's a title track that encompasses the whole world.
Thank you very much, Ken, for giving us a little bit of technology nostalgia here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thanks very much, Hubert. Lovely to talk to you.
Fantastic to hear from Ken Reed there, taking a trip down his technology memory lane. And I know we touched on this last year when we were celebrating 20 years of RNIB Connect Radio, but keen to hear from you, Jackie Brown, and Hubert Balkovich, your first piece of accessible technology that really made a big impression on you, Hubert.
I don't want to be predictable and say a screen reader, so actually I'll go a full circle where, bearing in mind I'm currently wearing a smartwatch, what first kind of amazed me is when someone got me a old school talking watch, because I always wanted when I was a child to wear a watch. I thought it was cool, but I didn't think I could use them. And then someone said, I've got you a talking watch. And I'm like, what do you mean a talking watch? And then they showed me this watch I got for Christmas one year, and it talked. And to me, it was a small thing, but it was something I found fascinating and incredible at the time.
Were you one of those kids then that just kept pressing it relentlessly?
Unfortunately, yes, at first. I mean, the novelty wore off eventually, but it was quite fascinating that I could actually accessibly tell the time without having to ask someone. I felt really quite incredible, even though it was, what seemed probably like a quite a small thing, but it was something I could do accessibly for the first time.
I always used to feel very self-conscious, though. I had a talking watch for a while. I think it was from RNIB. It had a male voice. It was sort of a squarish kind of shaped watch. And, I really liked it, but I always felt a bit sort of self-conscious, like I pressed it, you know, and then everyone knew that I was checking the time.
It was the big bong at the beginning of them. A lot of them had a boing.
Oh,
The
yeah.
time is.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't tolerate that. You know, I had the male voice. Yeah. Some of those really shrill, nasty
Yeah.
sounding ones weren't great, were they? You'd like to think it's moved on a bit since then.
I think it has. I mean, in school, I always kind of tried to desperately cover the speaker to still be able to hear the time. So I guess that was the only thing. But obviously, watches have improved since where you've also got tactile watches, but you also have the Apple Watch giving you time and vibrations. But it's just, yeah, it's just something that at the time I thought on top of the world with such a small piece of assistive technology that actually made a big difference.
I saw a thread about this recently. Somebody was asking about tactile watches or vibrating watches, actually, more specifically, that weren't smartwatches. And I did a bit of Googling around and found there's a product called the Meteor. I don't know if either of you have heard of that one, that vibrates a pattern to tell you the time, but a bit more affordable than a smartwatch.
I like my good old Braille watch or tactile watches, as they're called these days. I've got about three different ones. And I don't wear them in the house so much because there's so many ways of getting the time. But I do love to take them out when I go out somewhere. I like to have a watch on my wrist, and it's always a tactile watch.
And the Bradley, of course, that's still around.
Yep.
And with your tactile watch, Jackie, it's one of those with the hinged lid, you know. I
Yep.
mean, because I always found with those that the clasp would wear out eventually, and then the lid would pop open unexpectedly, and then you'd end up breaking it.
Breaking it. Yeah, no. The lids on mine are not too bad actually. They open at the 6 o'clock position. I do have one that opens at the 3 o'clock position. So that will tell you how far they go back, but they're still in good working order. I noticed watch batteries have gone on a huge amount lately. They're beginning to cost a lot more money. But yeah, I still do like my tactile watch. But my first real piece of access technology was the BBC B system from Acorn, where you had a BBC machine, a lovely keyboard on it with a synthesizer. The first one I used was a Braid, and then I went on to the Dolphin Apollo, and it was really good. I used this word processor called WordWise Plus, and these big floppy disks, not the 3.5 ones, but the big 5.25-inch floppies that you put in, and you ran the word processor and the speech synthesizer through these. And that was my first experience. I worked at the time as well, and I just couldn't believe this idea of working and actually typing and then reading it back so that you could check your own work instead of using a manual typewriter. And then you had to, if you made a mistake, you had to get somebody to either Tippex it out or you had to just type over it. But that was my first experience, and I completely and utterly fell in love with access tech after that. And I went on to use a variety of equipment, including the good old Eureka.
Oh, you know, you took the word out of my mouth. That was absolutely foremost in my mind
Yeah.
about, you know, the Eureka was a Braille note taker, had a Braille keyboard, 8 function keys and some navigation keys. Quite a Marmite voice, you know, not everyone got
Yeah,
along
it was
with
Australian.
the voice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but it was this sort of strange, I don't
Weird.
know. You couldn't really assign it a gender, you know. It was, I don't
Yeah.
know, it was, but it had amazing software.
It did.
And so there was a word processor and all the clock calendar. There was a music composer. You
A
could
voltmeter.
program, yeah. And so some of the hardware in there was always a bit ahead of its time because it had a modem and you could
Yep.
actually dial up, you know, bulletin boards before the
Yep.
internet really became a thing. There was a full-size serial port. You could connect it to an embosser or a printer. I did a ton of my schoolwork on the
So
Eureka,
did
learned a
I.
little bit of programming and all of that. And you know, the really remarkable thing, Jackie, for me, the Eureka had a magazine. I think it was called Archimedes or Archie or something. Every couple of months, this disc would come through the post full of articles.
Stuff that people had written and added to, or programs that they had, you know, games as well. There was a lot of games that you could play, and it was like a user group the people running the group put this stuff together on a, as you say, a magazine, and it was tremendous. When it plopped through the post, you knew it was due. You know, we just stopped everything to put that on the Eureka to see what was happening. I did lots of typing and stuff like that on it. I used it at work for note taking. It just was a thing of its own, and it had its own community. And the voice, as you say, was very quirky, and you either liked it or you didn't. But she would say things like, "Please press any key to retrieve." It was so funny.
Well, the important thing for me, and the reason I think it made such a huge impact on my life, particularly the magazine, was that really for the first time, I became aware of blind people in other parts of the world, because I was reading articles from blind people in Canada, in Australia, you know, New Zealand, the United States, of course. I heard that, you know, that Stevie Wonder had one of these devices, you know, and so I really started to feel connected to a wider community of blind people around the world through that device, and that I think is why it made such an impression on me as a teenager. So let us know what accessible technology made a massive impression on you. Of course, we know about screen readers and smartphones and things like that, but is there anything else that you...
Yeah, let's go back a bit.
Yeah, indeed.
Go back further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hearing all that just made me feel really quite amazed, because I never used the devices you've just mentioned, you two. So it's quite fascinating for someone that kind of wasn't around when that sort of technology was around. I find it fascinating to learn about all these.
All right, techtalk@rnib.org.uk with your accessible technology memories. Jackie, Hubert, thanks a lot.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now, we make no secret of the fact that many of us who are here at Tech Talk, yes, we do have the occasional iOS device. And of course, we've been talking a lot lately about developments on that platform. But we also recognise that there are other mobile operating systems out there, not least of which, of course, is Android. And we're expecting Android 15 to drop sometime during October. And here to help us unpack some of what's new in Android 15, especially in the area of AI, we are joined by friend of Tech Talk, Steve Nutt from Computer Room Services. Welcome in, Steve. Good to have you back on the programme. Just talk us through, if you would, what can Android users expect in Android 15 from a blindness perspective?
Well, firstly, TalkBack 15 is out along with Android 15. So when Android 15 comes out, some people, in fact, might have TalkBack 15 already, because TalkBack 15 has been released. And TalkBack 15, you can get that on any phone down to Android 11, I believe. So if you've got anything below Android 11, you won't get TalkBack 15. One of the really good features that TalkBack 15 has got now is live image description. What that means is you can literally touch an image. So that can be in WhatsApp, in Facebook, or whatever. And you can three-finger single tap and select describe image, and it will go online and give you a full detailed description of the image. And that's great. I really love it for browsing social media, you know, Facebook, WhatsApp, whatever. Anyone that sends you a picture. To be honest, Dave, as someone who's totally blind, I never ever thought I'd be interested in pictures. But now I love it. I ask people to send me pictures now when they've been on holiday. Amazing, isn't it? So, and the pictures are all described to me by TalkBack. In fact, I'd love to tell you a little story. My cleaner last week, she couldn't come in because she got COVID, but she sent me a picture of the COVID test. And TalkBack not only told me that it was a COVID test, it told me that it was positive. So That is amazing. That is one of the really good features of TalkBack 15. And as I say, everyone can have that from Android. As well as image descriptions, we have Gemini, of course. Now, again, anyone can have Gemini from, I think, Android 12 up or 11 or 12. Please don't quote me on these versions, but I think it's 11 or 12. It's an app on the Play Store, so you can go and download the app and install it. And then you can switch your assistant from Google Assistant to Gemini. Now, Gemini is not complete yet. It does have some flaws, and when it can't do something, it switches back to the assistant automatically. But the reason I mentioned Gemini is because we have Gemini Live. Now, what Gemini Live is conversational AI. So what you can do is you can initiate a conversation with Gemini, and it will keep listening. So when it's finished telling you the answer to whatever you've asked it, you can then ask it further questions without saying the hey word or the whatever word. You don't have to repeat commands or anything like that. And it's contextually aware as well. So if you are pointing your camera at an image, you can say, what color is that? And it will tell you what it is, and various things like that, which is really cool. That is called Gemini Live. It's not open by default. So when you open Gemini, it behaves normally like the regular assistant. But then you tap the live button and then you can start a conversation. I do understand that eventually you'll be able to give it a command to go into live mode. You'll be able to say, let's start a chat, and it will go into live mode. And what's really exciting is that this will be built into the new Pixel Buds Pro 2, which are the new Google Pixel Buds headphones, which are supposed to be 27% smaller and lighter and apparently very, very comfortable, so they say. But I haven't seen those yet, so I can't really tell. For those that have a Pixel Watch, more health functions are coming. So Wear OS 5 is coming out, and that means that the Pixel Watch will have more health metrics. The other new feature of phones, and I think it's unique to Pixel phones, this one, is you can take your body temperature, believe it or not. I mean, who would have thought you can take your body temperature with your phone? So what you do is you hold the camera close to your forehead when you're running the thermometer app, and it gives you voice guidance. You hold the phone to your forehead. Don't touch your forehead. Just hold it just a little way away from your forehead. And it counts down a bit like camera guidance. It goes 3, 2, 1, and then it pings, and then it takes your temperature and gives you your body temperature, and it passes it all into your fitness apps. So that's a pretty good bunch of new stuff, isn't it?
How are you, Steve, is the question. Look, there's a lot to unpack there. So
yeah.
So on the image recognition stuff first, that was the first thing you mentioned.
Yes.
Obviously, images on social media where somebody hasn't put a tag on there, you're able to use AI to get descriptions of those. And you said that somebody had sent you a picture. So that's going to work with pictures in your messages. Does it also work with your camera roll as well, your photos in there? Yeah, fantastic. And then how about the camera itself, if you go into the camera viewfinder?
Yes, if you focus where it says viewfinder and then do image description, you can hold the camera in the direction, do image description with a three finger single tap, and then describe image from the talkback menu. And then it will go up on the internet and it will do a live full description of the picture. So, yes, you can look around with the camera as well.
Where I've found some of this image recognition technology really interesting is going back into the archives and finding old photographs that,
yes,
you know, perhaps I kept, not really knowing what I was going to do with them. You know, I've got thousands and thousands of photographs that either, you know, I've tried to take, or other people have taken on my behalf, or that have been sent to me over the years. And I never imagined that, you know, I would get lucid descriptions of them. I sort of half hoped that maybe one day I'd sit down with somebody to sort them all out, you know. And it was one of those sort of jobs that I thought, oh, probably when I'm retired, you know.
One of the first things that I ever image described when image description was a thing, you know, I think Seeing AI or Be My AI was one of the first apps I did it with. I got it to describe my mum, and my mum's no longer with us, and made me emotional because it described, you know, what she was wearing, the colours she was wearing, the colours of her hair and things like that. And it's just beautiful, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's when it's really powerful, when people send you those family photos. I've got relatives that have gone in their loft, you know, and they've scanned in all their old photo albums, and they'll say, oh, I found a picture of, you know, a deceased relative, or yeah, maybe you when you were a kid or something like that, and they send it and you can get that description. That's so powerful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And yeah, what I'm hoping eventually, and I'm fortunate to be on the Talkback Trusted Testers group, so I beta test Talkback. And what I'm hoping is eventually you'll be able to ask questions of Talkback directly, you know, rather than having to go into another app.
Right. So let's talk about that. So you mentioned Gemini Live, which you have to download separately, and then you can have a conversation.
Yeah.
So why give me some practical examples of how that might work.
If you're pointing the camera at something and you say to Gemini, let's start a chat. And then you can say, what am I looking at? And the camera will do what, for example, you know, some of these glasses do, and they'll describe to you what you're looking at. And then you can say, what color is it? So it will know what it is because it's conversationally aware, or textually, or contextually aware, I should say. And then it will carry on the conversation, and you don't have to repeat what it is, the object you're looking at, if you know what I mean. So that's what makes it conversational, as I call it. It's really interesting. But what I'd like to see is that when you bring up the describe image in TalkBack, there'd be a nice little edit box where you could speak or say or type to it, you know, questions about the image. That would be really good. The other thing I said to them I'd like to see is to be able to teach faces, so that TalkBack would recognize faces in images and tell you them by name. That would be really good, wouldn't it? Like the Envision glasses can.
Hmm. And as a blind person yourself, how descriptive and detailed are you finding these conversations with Gemini, for example?
Very, very. I mean, you know, the conversation, like I like football. I like Tottenham. And I say, you know, where is Tottenham in the table? And then you can say, who are they playing next? And it will realize that I'm talking about Tottenham, and it will just carry on talking to me about who they'll play. When can I hear them on the radio? You know, what station can I hear them on the radio? And it carries on being contextually aware with me, and it carries on looking at that. And you can take the conversation somewhere else as well and go, what about Arsenal? And it'll carry on because it's contextually aware of what you've just said about...
Are you allowed to say that as a Tottenham fan, Steve?
Of course, you know, and you can carry on this conversation.
And just explain again, if you would, because I think sometimes there is some confusion for people coming from an iOS world.
Yeah.
TalkBack is a separate app. You can download TalkBack 15 without necessarily having the full fat Android 15. That's right, yeah?
No, TalkBack is built into most Android phones now.
Right, but I think you said at the beginning that you could get TalkBack 15 already.
Yes, you can, but your phone will automatically get TalkBack 15. It's not a separate...
Sure.
It's not a separate app.
No, I understand that, but if you hadn't got Android 15 yet, you could still avail yourself of TalkBack 15.
Yes, but it's not a separate app. It's actually built into the ROM.
Mm.
So TalkBack will simply update itself on your phone. So TalkBack is now like VoiceOver. It never used to be an automatic app. It never used to be an app in the ROM, but it now is. So if up from it, or Android 11 or 10 or 11, TalkBack is now built into every Android phone. So you will get 15 if you've got Android 14, TalkBack 14, for example. So there is no difference anymore between TalkBack and VoiceOver. They're both actually in the ROM.
Are there any other benefits to Android 15 that blind users would be particularly interested in?
There are refinements. There are fixes. I mean, you know, they've fixed bugs in Braille. They've updated the Braille tables, which is good. So UEB is better now. There was one or two errors in UEB, but they've got that. They've got that refined now, and Braille screen input is nice. So whether you do screen away or desktop mode, tabletop mode, I think they call it the same, don't they? As in iOS, they call it screen away and tabletop. And I think, but yes, I mean, there have been updates to that. I think TalkBack overall is more stable, and I'm glad to see that. But you know, I was really excited about these Gemini Live and image recognition, particularly because they are different. They're new to TalkBack. TalkBack's never had those before.
And are you expecting Gemini Live to come to other Google devices? We've got a Google Home, for example, where we've got the Google Assistant. Do you think one day we might get Gemini Live on there, or will we need to upgrade?
Right. There are two different versions of Gemini. The Gemini for older devices, which is just Gemini, and it uses Gemini Online, just like it uses Siri and like you do Siri or Google Assistant online. They work the same way. That will always work on older things like smart speakers and various things. But you've also got this new thing called Gemini Flash. Now, Gemini 1.5 Flash is actually built in to the ROM of Pixel 9s. And so I haven't got one yet. I've only got a Pixel 8 Pro, but it's actually built into the ROM itself of the Pixel 9, which means that you can have limited conversation with Gemini offline. Even if you haven't got an internet connection, you can go into Gemini Live and it will answer things about your phone, like the battery level and various things like that. But it will be contextually aware, much the same. This is what's coming to the earbuds. So when you've got your earbuds in, you'll be able to talk to your earbuds, even if you've got no phone signal and various things, without taking the phone out of your pocket. This is what they're trying to get to. So eventually, Gemini will replace Assistant, Google Assistant. But I don't know yet whether older smart speakers will be able to cope with Gemini, because it's quite processor intensive, apparently.
Okay. And what resources, communities, places to go would support somebody looking to dip their toe in the world of Android?
Well, first of all, one of the things I'd recommend, really recommend, to be honest, is the Blind Android Users podcast, which is a podcast a bit like Tech Talk, comes out every week. It's about an hour and a half long, and it goes through the whole gamut of Android. They have an app of the week. They do basic tutorials on Samsung and other phones, different phones, and how their settings differ and things like that. And they really deep dive into Android. So if you're interested, they do it at a very basic level. So you don't have to know Android to know it. If you just want to dip your toe in and find out about Android, then have a listen to the Blind Android Users podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Then you can go to androidaccessibility.com, which I guess is the Apple Viz of Android, and you can find out about apps that are accessible on there. And you can also follow Accessible Android on various social media like Mastodon and things like that. And they talk about all of this stuff as well. And they're a good bunch of guys, and they do a good job of. They recommend apps, and they always report new apps that are coming out. There are a few new GPS apps out now. One that I never heard of called Candle. why Candle for GPS? I'm not sure, but it's a walking app.
To find your way.
Yeah,
to Candle to find your way. There you go. Steve, look, this has been brilliant. Where do we? If someone wants to follow you on the socials or find out more about the work you're doing at Computer Room Services, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So thanks for the plug. Go to www.comproom.co.uk for everything I do business wise, and Talking Droid, or one word, on Mastodon as well. And I'm also Talking Droid pretty much wherever you see social media. Well, not wherever you see, because I don't think I'm not on Instagram yet or anything like that, but I'm all over the place, really. And just to say that if anyone is thinking of doing Android and they want any training or any help with setting up Android phones, I'm quite happy. I also train on iOS as well, by the way. I do keep my foot in both camps. I have an iOS, I have an iPhone 12 Pro, and I'm looking forward to seeing Apple Intelligence, to be fair, as well, because I love AI stuff. I must say, I really like AI. I think it's going to be a game changer for the blind. So on all platforms, both platforms, it's going to be really, really good. And I can train on both, and we can also train on computers in general and things like that.
Steve Nutt, aka Talking Droid from Computer Room Services. Thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome.
Now, it is quite early. It's 20 to 7 in the morning. Now, the reason we are recording this early is because I'm going to show you how to make an accessible cup of coffee. Yes, not just any coffee. It's more kind of filter coffee, which will be quite nice. So I received this coffee maker for Christmas, and I thought, well, why not show you that? Because it has certainly changed things for me. What we're going to show you is the De'Longhi Brilliante ICMJ 210.BK 10 cup filter coffee maker. Bit of a long name, but trust me, it is quite a something. Now, I say 10 cup, they will have to be quite small cups to make 10 of them. However, never mind. I will describe the unit to you. It's not the biggest unit, but it's quite tall. It has a few compartments. It has a water compartment on the back, which has a square lid, which you lift and pour the water in. The compartment is very big for the water, which is quite handy. Then in front of the water compartment is a bigger compartment with a big circular lid, which houses a little plastic cone-shaped container in which sits filter paper. And the container slots in nicely into its compartment. And then below that compartment is the base of the machine on which sits a glass jug, which comes with the coffee machine, and you have to use this particular jug because the way it clicks in, it has a little dome at the top of the lid, which then presses in on the button, which is situated at the bottom of the filter container. And if that button's pressed in, the coffee will then come out as soon as it's ready. So don't make the same mistake I did. It will not pour the coffee directly into the cup, which mistake I made was I stood there wondering why the coffee's not pouring. So that jug has to be with the machine. So do keep this in mind. And don't break it, but you can buy it again. However, obviously these things come at a cost. Now with this jug, it has a measure of cups that is displayed on it. I, for obvious reasons, I don't intend to use it, but you can do so. So how I do the coffee, you can just do a load in the jug, pour however much water you want in the jug, and then pour that water into the container. If you're making it for a group of people, I'm going to show you how to make a solo cup of coffee. So I've got my travel flask here because we'll make the coffee for my train journey. I'm going to pour some water into it. Now, the best way of doing it for me, water-wise, is pour water into the cup I'm going to be drinking from. Therefore, I can decide how much I want. And then pour that cup into the container. Now, as spacious as this container is, if you pour water from big mugs with a big rim and quite wide, then water can go outside of its intended destination. So keep this in mind. I have done it before. A good thing, as this flask is a tall, thin flask, so therefore it pours a bit easier into the container. So filter papers, you put it into the cone-shaped container, and the filter papers are flat when you take them out of the box, but you can then open it up and spread it within the cone-shaped container. And this is where your coffee will go. So I've got some coffee here. Now what I do when I pour the coffee into the machine is I put a tea towel and the jar of coffee on the tea towel just to be tidy, because again, not often, the coffee has ended up outside of the intended destination. So I've got a little jar of coffee here. I'm just opening up. Now I'm going to fill 3 spoons into the coffee machine because that's what I find works best for this cup, but you can kind of figure that out as you go along. Add ground coffee, it's not coffee beans that it takes. There we go. Coffee's poured in and not much ended on the tea towel, but good precaution. That's what I always say. Here we go. Jar goes. We put the lid down. The good thing about this machine, it's a single button press. There's no other buttons but one big button on the bottom right-hand side of the unit, near the bottom edge, which is quite nice. It's fairly easy to spot, and once you press it, off it goes. And depending on, obviously, how big the coffee you're making will depend how long it will take. It will beep once it's stopped, but I always tell people to wait after the stopping beep because it will still make noises as if it's kind of pouring out the last bits of coffee. As you can hear, the machine is carrying the late noises. Making the coffee. The coffee's nicely pouring into the jug. Now it has made the beep that's indicates it's finishing. I'd say always wait until it stops making noise because I can hear it still pouring bits of coffee into the jug, so I want to make sure all of it goes. So we don't waste a single precious drop. So it has stopped making noise, but give it a little while yet. There's a click. There we go, it has stopped making its noises. And now, at this point, I know for sure that there's not going to be any coffee coming out, so I'm going to remove the jug out of the base, which is fairly simple. It slides out nicely. Don't touch the base of the machine. It is very hot, so don't recommend you touching it. And now we're going to pour the coffee in. You line up the spout of the jug, and the good thing is it's plastic, not metal, so it hasn't heated up. So you line it up with the cup and pour the precious liquid coffee.
Into my travel flask.
Which in itself is actually quite a safe one because it has a lock that you can put on the lid, which means it won't spill when you're travelling, which is quite nice. All the coffee is poured away, so I'll put the jug in the sink again to fill it up with water and then wash it up when needed. A good nice thin brush is possibly helpful because then it'll help you to wash the jug. Then I put the filter paper with the coffee in the bin and put the compartment, because it can be simply removed, into the sink as well to be washed up, so it's nice and easy to clean. And that is all there is to it. A nice, simple-to-use coffee machine. Retail-wise, the last time I checked, it does retail for £100 on Amazon. However, that price can fluctuate because I know people who have purchased it for cheaper a while back, so it depends. There are a few models of it going, but this is the one I found. It's the most recent that's available to purchase, but I know some people that have slightly older models that, well, work on a similar use. So they're not too much different. But if you have any more questions, then let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Good to have you company. As always, we've reached the end of another Tech Talk. Do tune in next week when we'll have lots more for you. But if you would like to get in contact in the meantime, it's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Jackie Brown and Hubert Pavalkovich, until next time, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.